Leading off today's program, Bill Resnick interviews Diane Feely, who is an organizer, active in environmental, labor, feminist, and housing struggles in Detroit, and also a writer and editor. They discuss the current political scene featuring an angry electorate and insurgencies threatening to split both the Democrats and Republicans, and the astounding and welcome change in popular ideas about socialism and capitalism. Bill?
Hi, Diane Feely. Welcome to KABU.
Thank you.
Diane Feely is a liberatory, democratic, leftist, grassroots organizer, active in environmental, labor, feminist, and housing struggles. Civil disobedience is her middle name, though she's only been arrested 12 times, always brings her lunch. She's also a writer and an editor of the journal Against the Current. In all that work, she draws on her experience working the assembly lines in Detroit as a United Auto Workers militant, fighting for a Democratic Union. Today we'll be discussing the current political scene and the vast opportunities to build a contending militant Democratic Socialist pole, which of course amounts to a sea change in U.S. politics. So Diane, let's discuss the current political scene. What do you see its main features and why it's so really astounding, in fact, and what a great opportunity it now is providing?
Well, I think you've had since the 1980s this economic restructuring of American capital that has resulted in a loss of labor power, of unionization, and so it stymied us for a number of years, and yet the neoliberal order is so harsh and so cruel that you begin to see some fightbacks. And of course the Me Too movement is number one on the list right now, but also the community struggles that are taking place, particularly in places like Detroit and Flint.
And all over the country in some ways, around housing, the minimum wage, there's tremendous amount of agitation. The Sanders campaign was very important as he grew stronger in the Democratic Party and began threatening Hillary. And he became extremely well-known and popular because he was expressing this critique and was expressing this set of ideas of why people were in the richest country in the world so precarious and worried about their children at every level almost. Indeed, even the absurd rich are worried, but for different reasons. It seems to me that this is an amazing moment, actually, if you think about it that way.
Yes, I remember sitting in a sports bar with about 500 other people listening to one of the early debates between the Democratic Party contenders, and they were asked the question, what is the most critical issue facing our world today? And Hillary and the former governor of Maryland said terrorism, and Bernie said climate change, and the whole 500 of us just broke out in just spontaneous applause, because that's the issue facing us, and it's something that the most candidates won't even talk about.
Yeah, and he also was talking about the vast inequality and the precarity of ordinary people and their fears for the future. And footloose capital, their investor class and the financial class becoming vastly rich and owning almost everything and making housing more expensive. I mean, he managed to put together a very radical sort of set of ideas. It was very enlightening, I think, for many to hear his sort of analysis.
I think it was a very much of a left populist program, and we can critique it at several levels, but the point is it was so different from how mainstream politicians talk, and his campaign was exciting because of that, because it was, yes, he ran inside the Democratic Party, but he in many ways was outside, not taking corporate money and having his own campaign, doing things differently. I was active in labor for Bernie, and it was the first time that people said, we should be the ones who decide who the union should endorse. And so it was a very democratic moment when actually in my local, we voted who did we want the UAW to endorse. That's the very first time that has ever happened.
He was not endorsed by the National Union, or was the UAW?
He was not endorsed.
No.
He was not endorsed. And many locals did not do what my local did.
Right.
But nonetheless, it became an example. And to me, that was the importance of the Labor for Bernie, that it broke with this model that it's the top officials who get to decide who we support.
There's so many other things, though, happening, too. Now there's going to be a contingent in the U.S. Congress and in many cities. Socialists are winning office. The word socialism now has surpassed capitalism in the favorability rating in the United States. Who would ever thought anything like that could happen? Diane, before getting into how the left can operate and organize and actually make a difference in people's lives while organizing for much more, for ultimately gaining power, popular power, and democratizing the society. Let's talk about the branch of the left that we sort of represent. Our history is anti-Stalinist. Let's discuss how we differ to a large extent from many of the lefts that have preceded us.
Well, I think the main distinguishing factor is the insistence on democracy, that we should control the economy. We should make the decisions. And I'm very happy at the other night I was at a meeting to talk about the incinerator that Detroit has, which creates incredible levels of pollution. People were not only talking about the need to shut it down and to move to a different system of zero waste and recycling, but also caring about the workers in this plant. We need to have a just transition. We don't want to harm these workers. These workers have a right to a job, but a clean job and not one which is polluting. I mean, they're the ones who have to ingest this stuff just like we do. I think the question of democracy is really a key one, and I think just transition is another element of that need for democracy at every level.
We also stand for this reconstruction in view of the climate crisis and the threat to all of our lives, but also the growing inequality in the United States. It seems to me we also stand for a reconstruction of the economy, a reconstruction of how we produce things, a reconstruction of cities and the life ways of their people, and to make it radically democratic, that is, participative institutions. There'll be jobs for everybody, and there's the capacity to do it. This is Bill Resnick for the Old Mole Variety Hour talking to Diane Feeley. For many years, she worked the assembly lines of Detroit in the auto industry. She now continues as a grassroots organizer in anti-displacement, affordable housing campaigns, and labor organizing, of course, and saving the planet from climate change. We've been discussing the sea change in U.S. politics and the opportunity for a liberatory, democratic, grassroots, environmentalist left. Diane, you've done a lot of work over the years. Tell us about some of the work you've done that both challenges the current system and does decent things for working people, but also calls attention to the great many, many things that have to be done.
Here I live in Motor City in Detroit. So when I was working, I would always talk about, yes, we do need a certain amount of manufacturing. But what is it that we need to manufacture? Do we need more cars or do we need a mass transit system? Detroit doesn't make buses. Buses are usually imported from Canada or other countries because there are just a very small number of them are made in this country. So how could Detroit help with our manufacturing knowledge to contribute toward a different society? Well, we should be making trains and buses, and my plant, which made axles, would be a very good spot to make wind turbines. When you start thinking about what that industry can produce, not what it does produce, you really begin to open up. And most people one-third of the people in Detroit don't have cars, and we don't have a transit system so that the majority of people who live in Detroit work outside of the city and spend an enormous amount of their time and money getting to and from work. So here's one particular case. Another case is we used to be a city of almost 3 million people, and now we're 700,000. And one of the good things about Detroit is we actually have enough space to have parks and urban gardens within the city and replanting trees. So we can be a city that's not underfoot, where people can have a life for themselves within the city. But as much as we're doing to try to deal with of the city fathers, the officials, they just want the old trickle-down system where they fix up the downtown area, the 7.5 miles of the downtown area. When we're a city of neighborhoods of 139 square miles in which hundreds of families are displaced every year through illegal taxes. So we see the tremendous inequality of the current system, and the officials only want to reinforce inequality. It forces people to imagine a different system, which is going to be very different from the one that we have. We're on the Great Lakes, and yet the question of water is a key question for us, not only the price, but also the fact that it is polluted through the industrial waste that have been put in, and agricultural waste that are being put into the Great Lakes.
The Detroit water system that you've managed to keep in public, the corporations wanted, they wanted to privatize Detroit's auto system when Detroit went bankrupt. The Detroit system, though, was built in the glory days by a social democratic government. The Detroit water system is still very good, isn't it? I mean, at least in its durability and its capacity, and even in the water supply.
Our water comes from deep in Lake Huron, and it is monitored, tested every hour. So it is a very pure water system.
Right.
However, the problem is the failure to keep up with the infrastructure. It's a city system which has now been taken over because it was built out into many counties beyond the city, and that's now been taken over by a larger public system, and there are real problems with that too. But I would say that the city has not given what the water department needs. So, for example, water costs a great deal, and there are water shutoffs. So there are people living in Detroit without water. And one ex-city council person said, and someone who used to be a leftist said, well, if people want water, they could just go down to the Detroit River and get it. So there's this, when we say there should be a water affordability plan, they say, oh, you're talking about free water. Can't have free water. Somebody's got to pay for it. So we never said free water, although that's a great idea, but we said there should be a water affordability plan because poor people should not have to pay 20% of their total income for water. Water is a public health question.
You spent a week, I know, in Syracuse working with Howie Hawkins' mayoral campaign. He has a very interesting program of alternatives like public banks and the rest. Tell us about that program that, in fact, could be successful all over the country.
Yes, I'm very impressed with the political platform that Howie Hawkins put forward when he was running for mayor of Syracuse. And now that he's running for governor of New York State, he has a similarly very good program. When he ran for Syracuse mayor, and I was there for about 10 days, what really impressed me was how he took all of the particular problems of Syracuse, which are very similar to the problems of Detroit at a smaller scale. That is, it's a deindustrialized city. It's a very segregated city where you have these white suburbs surrounding it. Poor transportation, and talked about how the city could be changed. One example was he had a press conference right in front of a commercial laundry that had folded a couple of years before, and he said, we could restart supplying the institutions, the hospitals and other institutions with linens that would be washed and ironed in this facility, and it could be a workers' co-op. And how could that be done? Through a Syracuse bank that kept the resources in the city so that they could be used in the city for the development of the workers and the community there. So in every single case, I was very impressed with how he specifically took the problems that people faced every day and came up with beginning solutions to those problems.
Yeah, and I'm sure that in his campaign, he talked about the Cleveland example of, in fact, a commercial laundry that is, in fact, serving the whole city ecologically and completely up to date, good salaries for people, and also part of a network of other kinds of cooperatives. Democratic work is really possible, and, of course, unions representing those workers. It's a complicated process of democracy within industry. Diane, it seems to me we can cite similar examples of what we have to do, let's say, in energy, like in California, which we've done a lot on this show. This is the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm talking to Diane Feely, who's a all-purpose organizer in Detroit. In California, Alameda County and many others are taking over their energy system and creating very democratic processes for energy supply, now buying it and out in the market, and still it's cheaper than what the investor-owned utilities were charging, but also, in fact, building its own supplies of electrons, that is, electricity-producing installations, all over Alameda County, getting bonding authority to do it, and running it democratically, allied with the transports, the transportation system, and also trying to create housing around transportation hubs. They're trying to reconstruct particularly the poor areas like Richmond and Alameda County and East Oakland.
I'm very active in helping the community of Brightmoor, which is a section of Detroit, that is extremely poor, and where there was scattered site housing, rent-to-own housing built 18 or 19 years ago, but there's no possibility. It looks like, well, we can't give you this house after you've put all of this money and you've been here for more than 15 years because we haven't paid the banks back. And so we're working with those families. And one of the questions that comes up is the management company is really inept. And so I raised the idea, you know what would be good would be to have a management co-op that would have workers who could repair your house as they begin to have problems, because what's happened is many of these houses have deteriorated for the lack of skilled workers. They come and they patch something up, but it's still not really fixed. Brightmoor is one of those cases where there needs to be, instead of the focus on the downtown and trickle-down example, a community-based example where there are resources that are put into the community and where the community can have the space to begin to repair and to own many of the homes that were built there instead of public housing. This rent-to-own business is done in many cases instead of constructing public housing as there have been constructed in many other European countries. This is a model of people who live without water, people who can't repair their own homes. So that's what needs to be done in reimagining a city.
Diane Feely, you've done a life of hard work on struggling for ordinary people and through it all maintain this belief that we collectively run the society much better. In fact, must do that because the people who are running it are going to destroy the planet if it continues. Diane, it's been really good talking to you. Thanks a lot.
Okay, nice talking to you. Bye.
Get up, stand up for your right.